Welcome to Watchmen on the Wall, a daily outreach of Southwest Radio Ministries and SWRC.com. Today, staff evangelist James Collins talks with Vietnam veteran and Purple Heart recipient Dave Reaver about the meaning and significance of Memorial Day. And Marvin McIlvaney will have a timely Bible in the News report. On this Memorial Day, we want to take time and remember the sacrifice of our military and their families. James Collins comes now to help us remember with a very special guest.
Memorial Day is a day set aside to commemorate the men and women who died while serving in the armed forces. Today, we pause to remember the veterans who made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. We give thanks to God as we remember their service and sacrifice for the freedom that we have. So it's fitting that the theme of our program today is God and Country, and there is nobody more qualified to talk about God and Country than my guest today, Dave Reaver. Dave is a veteran of the United States Navy who served in Vietnam. He was only in Vietnam for 8 months when he was burned beyond recognition when a phosphorus grenade he was getting ready to throw exploded in his hand. The ordeal left him hospitalized for 14 months, where he underwent numerous major surgeries. His survival and his life are a miracle of God. Dave's a hero of mine. In 2010, I was serving as an Army chaplain in Iraq. As a resiliency coach with the Department of Defense, Dave came to Iraq in 2010, and I was blessed to spend some time with him. In 2014, I was serving again as a chaplain in Kuwait, and once again, Dave came to minister to our troops, and I was blessed to spend more time with him. And I am certainly blessed once again to speak with him today. Dave, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Chaplain. I'm happy to be with you. And boy, you brought back some good memories. I just got back a few days ago from Hawaii. I was with Special Operations Command Pacific with the Navy SEALs and the Special Boat Kings and the Green Beret. Well, we had a great visit. It's the best I think I've ever had. And I'm glad to tell you, Chaplain, I'm going stronger, better, accomplishing more than I ever have in my life.
Well, that's wonderful, Dave. I would like for you to share your story with us. It's a long way from being a preacher's kid in Texas to the rivers of Vietnam to being one of America's most beloved evangelists. Tell me about your call to ministry and how that was interrupted by the war in Vietnam.
Chaplain, I was called to preach it, I think, at a very early age of about 5 years old. I sensed it. And I recall, as a boy, the desire to be like my dad, who was a pastor. I didn't desire to be like a basketball player or football player or baseball. I wanted to be a preacher. And when I was 16 years old, I made a commitment of my life to Christ and understood what it really meant. And from that time, I focused on ministry. And I graduated from high school, went into Bible college, got married, very happily married, had a great job at General Dynamics in Fort Worth building the F-111 sweep wing fighter bomber. And made more money than my college president. I got a little bit sidetracked thinking, man, I can make money. I paid for my school bill in a month. I paid for my house, the cost of being married. And next thing I know, my grades dropped to a level that I was no longer exempt from the draft. And I had a notice to go take a physical. I was being inducted. It wasn't a lottery. It was Uncle Sam wants you, and he got you. And I think if your trigger finger worked, you passed your physical, because I passed my physical, which was the only exam I passed that whole semester in college. I got an O+ on the blood test, I tell everybody, so I passed. And they told me I was going to be inducted in the Army, and I went out and joined the Navy before I could be sworn into the Army. And I thought, if I join the Navy, they'll put me on a battleship. They can't float that in a rice paddy, and I'll be safe. And a preacher's kid, as you clearly denoted, a preacher's kid found himself in the middle of training for a war and later in the war. But when I graduated from boot camp, they told me I would become a groundwater Black Beret, and they sent me to Naval Amphibious Base, Coronado, California. And my commander was a Navy SEAL, and ended up I was a groundwater Black Beret attached to SEAL Team 1 in Vietnam for 8 months. And the whole saga began at the end of 8 months, which was supposed to be a 13-month tour. But that's how a preacher's kid ended up over there. I got a little bit lazy on my grades. I told everybody my grades were below sea level. That's why I went in the Navy.
Well, Dave, tell me what happened to you. You were with the elite Brownwater Black Berets in Vietnam. Tell me what happened to you on the 26th of July, 1969.
I got up that morning like any other morning, did a workout with the SEAL team that I was in competition with to stay below 190 pounds and in perfect health. And I did not know that day I would lose 60 pounds. That night I weighed 130 pounds. And here's how it came down. 3 days earlier than the 26th, on the 23rd, I was injured. It's the worst firefight I'd ever been in, to be honest with you. It was an ambush set, and they tore us apart. And I ended up with an injury to my right eye and my right cheek. My right eye had steel going to the eyeball, and the right cheek was lacerated so bad I could blow air through it. And I was medevaced, and I was treated at a field hospital and released, but kept in the barracks, if you don't call it that. It was called Mobile Base 2. It was built on a barge in the middle of the Vamco Tay River. And those 3 days, I really had a chance to contemplate who I am, what I'm doing here, why am I here? And on the third day, they said, we don't have anybody to replace you. You're going to have to get back on that river, and you're ambulatory. So they stuck me right back on the boat. And this little boat's 11 and a half feet wide, 30 feet long, weighs 8 tons, 16,000 pounds. It'll do about 40 miles an hour without a bunch of SEALs on board. So they sent me back, and where they sent me was to the exact, I mean, geographically pinpoint the exact place I was injured 3 days earlier. And I had this sixth sense, and I really believe it was the Spirit of God warning me. They're here. I couldn't see them, hear them, smell them, but I felt their presence. And I jumped in my gun tub and armed 250 caliber machine guns and pointed them at the riverbank. And because I couldn't see that well, I picked up a white phosphorus hand grenade. I pulled the pin, and I prepared to throw it to burn down high brush, detonate booby traps, put up smoke. My job was to get up on that riverbank, get down in that hole in the ground and see if the enemy was in there. And if he was, get him out alive, as a dead man can't talk. I drew the grenade back, and unbeknownst to me, I was in the crosshairs of a sniper. And he squeezed off around, shooting in my head, but he missed, and he hit my hand. And as you know, Chaplain, your military service has taught you what very few would know that are not in the military. Phosphorus is a chemical that does not require a fuse, does not require a match, it does not require a trigger. If air touches white phosphorus, it explodes. And that bullet cracked that grenade, and it exploded in full force. And it covered me in 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit white-hot heat from my waist up. I went blind in my right eye. My right ear was blown off. My right face crossed my nose, down my lower left cheek, onto my neck, and down to my waist. 50% of my skin, almost 60%, was burned off. 60 pounds of flesh went up in smoke and was blown off me in seconds, according to the doctors. It was weeks later at Brooke Army Medical Center, where I'm a patient today, 60 operations later, only counting surgeries where they put me to sleep. I have still a large residue of difficulty, restriction in movement, blast damage to my entire upper body. It blew my hair off, but I got my hair back. I bought it, actually, Chapman. I bought it. There's a bald guy in China. And I got his hair. My ear's plastic. And it comes off. And at the worst time, I traveled for Dr. Benny Graham for many years and shared board members for 20 years. And one night I was preaching in Jamaica. Thousands of people, big crowds involved me, until I noticed the whole crowd was covering their mouth, wide-eyed, sucking air like a Hoover, pointing at me. And I said, something's not right. So I checked my fly, and it was fine. I didn't know what was wrong. I looked over, and there on my right shoulder was laying my ear. It had fallen off. Now, that's bad, but the good part is when I stuck it back on, all those people, thousands and thousands, thought it was a miracle, and they all got saved. So I'll use anything. And, you know, some people might say, well, wait a minute, Dave. That was a tragic moment on the riverbank in Vietnam. That was a moment you don't laugh about. I said, why not? You see, on 26th of July, 1969, the devil lowered the boom. He took his best shot, fired, and he hit me and knocked me halfway into eternity, Chaplain. I admit that. He got me. But it ain't over yet. I'm getting him back. Everything he did against me, I'm doing twice as much damage to his kingdom as he ever thought he'd do to me.
Amen. Amen, and brother.
Greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world.
Yeah.
And they don't call me to speak, as you well know what I do as a resiliency trainer in the Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Program for all the branches of the service. They don't call me because I'm good looking. Man, I'm a freak and a monster, although a few years ago, the Brooke Army Medical Center made me a nose, and I'm so proud of it. It's a little boy. I'm saying I can breathe through a nose. It's wonderful. They made me eyelids. They rebuilt my lips, and I can eat without drooling. they did work on my neck, and I can turn my head without torquing out my chin. And I look over all this, and I think, well, why do they call me? It's certainly not my educational value. I was in the top 10% of the lower one-third of my class. And I majored in math, and 5 out of 4 people don't even understand fractions. So who am I that they would call me? And I'll tell you why, Chapman. You know, they call me because I overcame.
Yes.
I stood up when I should have laid down. I spoke up when I should have been silent. And in doing so, I made a difference. Not because I'm great, not because I'm good, as you already see. You know me. I'm just an average guy. But you take the ordinary and add Jesus, and you become extraordinary. You take the normal and add Jesus, you become abnormal. You take the down and out and add Jesus, and you're above and beyond. So Christ made the difference in my life, Chaplain, and the military, even the secular military and public schools, to 8 million students in the last 30 years. They continue to call because I have a story of coming back when all the odds say you can't make it.
Well, Dave, you went from Vietnam to a hospital in Japan, and then from that hospital in Japan, you were brought back to the States, as you said, to Brooke Army Medical Center, BAMC, as those of us in the military know it, in San Antonio, and there you underwent debridement. Would you explain that process?
Yes, sir. Then they called it a Hubble tank. It was like a huge stainless steel bathtub that you could probably put 2 people in if you wanted to. It was big. It had about 8 inches of water in it, pure saline water. And they lowered my body into it, my burned carcass. And from my waist up, it was charcoal. My skin was just charcoal. They could break it off. They cut it off. They filleted me from the top of my head to my waist. It was insanity. And while they were doing that, at one point I reached up and I grabbed one of those physician attendants. There were 6 of them. I grabbed her by the hair of her head and I flipped her clear over into that tank. They were killing me and I was fighting for my life, and I tried to kill her because I thought she was killing me. And I had her head down in that water. Well, there were 5 other attendants. She was never at risk. They got her out, and my skin now is all in her hair, and her uniform, that white uniform, now is all pink with my diluted blood. She wiped her hands off, went right back to work on me trying to save my life. That's the dedication of those people.
Mm.
And when they got through, I was bowed up, and only the back of my heels and back of my head were touching. And I was in convulsions, and they put me on a gurney and pushed me down to the ICU. And on the way, the medic said, in the morning, we're going to do this again at 8:30. And I looked at him and I said, not you, or the entire Army's big enough to do that to me again. You'll never hurt me like that.
Mm.
Because I fully intended to take my life. See, I'd already tried that once, Chaplain. As you might recall, in Japan, I very stupidly asked for a mirror, and they very stupidly brought it. When I saw what was left, I knew my little teenage wife couldn't love me. Nobody could have told me that day that girl could love me. And I didn't want her to see my body, because the last words I said to her when I left to go to Vietnam was, I said, I'll be back without a scar. And now that promise was broken. And I didn't want her to open the casket, and I knew if I was dead, they would never open that casket. So I tried to take my life, and I actually pulled the tube out. I didn't have a gun or knife. I tried to kill myself by pulling that tube. And what I did was I got hungry. I pulled the wrong tube. I pulled out lunch. And the guy can die that way, but it takes a while.
Pulled
and
your feeding tube,
they
yeah.
sent me to America. And there they put me in that tank. And on the way, he said he's going to do that to me again. And I said, no, you're not. And he said, why not? And I said, you shouldn't have told me. He said, why not? I said, because now I'm not going to sleep all night. I'll be in anxiety attacks all night long, and I was right. And the next morning when they came to get me, I hadn't slept. And they were putting me on the gurney, and they forgot to lock the wheels down. And the gurney started rolling away, and they dropped me between the gurney and the bed. My lower half hit the deck. My upper half, I was holding on with my arms to the gurney and the bed, trying not to let my whole body fall. And a man stepped up, Chaplain. This is when my life would take a change, huge change. He was 6'7" at least, 350 pounds, and not an ounce of body fat. When he moved, cannonballs popped up on his chest and arms. I looked at him, and he was bald, he was black, and he had a tattoo on his arm. It said Rosie, and that was his name. His name was Rosie. He put an arm under the back of my head, and I stiffened my neck so he had leverage, and with his other arm, he picked me up like I was a feather. He carried me all the way down to that debridement room that we called hell. He'd been over that the bubble tank and lowered me in the water, physically lowered me in. He folded his arm and backstepped against the wall, and as the morning sun came in through that window, it reflected off that beautiful ebony skin, those tears that now look like streams of fire with that morning sun shining off it. His lips were moving as they were cutting on me and breaking off parts of my body, my fingers, my ear, my nose, pieces of me that they just broke off. Rosie was praying for me. And while he was praying for me, I drew strength from that amazing man. And they said, Rosie, he's had enough. And he picked me up and carried me all the way back. And as he carried me, he said these words to me over and over and over. You'll be fine, big man. You'll be fine. You'll see. He said it again and again. Got me to my bed, turned and faced me and said it again. You'll be fine, big man. You'll see. I looked into those auburn eyes and I think I saw a universe, Mars and Jupiter, the moon, the stars. I don't know who he was. And he stroked my head one more time and said it again. You'll be fine. And when he did, he kissed me on the forehead, which I've never let a man do. And he turned and walked away. 20 years later, I'm speaking for the Air National Guard 4th of July event in Redmond, Oregon. And there were 20,000 gathered for that event. I spoke and I never had more fun. And a woman stepped up and she said, your name is Dave. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, that's his nickname for David. I said, yes. She said, that's your middle name. I said, whoa, yeah, not many people know that. She said, your first name's Milton. I said, yes. Who in the world are you? She said, I'm the nurse you pulled in the tank 20 years ago. Oh. I said, I'm so embarrassed. She said, well, I thought it was you, but I didn't recognize you with your clothes on. And that was a stunner. And then I remembered the day I pulled her into that tank. I remembered the next day when Rosie picked me up and carried me. I looked at her and I said, do you remember a guy named Rosie? She was stunned like she came out of a trance. And she said, I haven't thought of him in years. I said, do you know where he is? She said, no. I said, do you know where he came from? She said, no. I said, do you remember his real name? She said, all I know is Rosie and it's tattooed on his arm. I said, yes, that's him. I said, madam, when did he come to Brooke Army Medical Center? She said, when you did. I said, when did he leave Brooke Army Medical Center? She said, when you did. Chaplain, you know what all my friends tell me, don't you?
Yeah.
He was an angel. I don't know. I truly don't. I hope not, because if he was an angel, he was on an assignment from God. He's just doing what he's told to do. But if he's the man I hope and pray he was, he didn't care what color I was. He didn't care what rank I was. And when you're burned, you're pretty rank, let me tell you. He didn't care what branch of service I had served in. He just saw a man falling through the cracks of life through those two beds, and he grabbed me before I hit the deck. And he carried me where I couldn't go. And it's my prayer, Chaplain, that on Memorial Day, people will hear what I'm saying and understand. We have to be a Rosie. We have to be a man who intervenes when nobody's watching and nobody thinks about it, nobody cares, nobody gives you credit. There's no reward. You just do it because you love humanity. And today, Chaplain, you're a man of love for humanity. You serve your country. You serve God. You're serving your audience today. And I'm honored to serve with you on one more mission together.
Dave, I remember when I was in Iraq, I was having a tough time. I'd seen men, and many of them were my friends, die. Some of them I held their hands as they took their last breath, and I was struggling with my calling. I was having thoughts of leaving the ministry, and I'll never forget, on October the 2nd, 2010, you came to Iraq and you gave me this verse from Psalm 84, "Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of them or others, who passing through the valley of Baca make it a well, the rain also filleth the pools." And you told me that as we make our way on this journey of life, we should make a well or a blessing to others. And if you dig a well for others, you'll never be without somebody else to dig a well for you. You'll go from strength to strength. And Dave, I've never forgotten that, and I've patterned my life on it. And I love you, brother, and I pray that all those countless others that you've impacted with your ministry are allowing you now to go from strength to strength.
Thank you, sir. And I am. I suffered the greatest loss of my entire existence on this planet 62 days ago when my little sweet wife passed away from COVID-19. And yet, a few weeks later, I was training in resiliency with Special Operations Command that I mentioned in Pacific in Pearl Harbor. And they said, "How can you do it, Dave?" I said, "Gentlemen, I have taught this since the war began on September 11, 2001. I've trained military all over the world. And I'm here today as standing, living proof that it works. And this is the rest of the story, Chaplain. Without Christ, I would never have been able to sustain it. But with Christ, I can do all things through him and because of him and by him and in him. So, yes, Chaplain, I am drinking from the water of well that somebody else dug for me because I dug a well for somebody else. And that's what you do, sir, and that's what this program's all about. And I pray that somebody will drink from the water of life freely today."
Before we go, would you please tell our listeners how they can find out more about your ministry?
It is so easy to do. Help a Vet. Simply those three words, help, H-E-L-P-A-V-E-T, any case, up or lower, helpavet.com. That'll take them to daveweaver.org, and they can see all that we do. They'll see our university program all over the world, 36 nations, 12 languages, 150,000 students. They'll see what we do in Vietnam with our school children, K-12 over there. They'll see all the work we do in military installations worldwide. They'll see all the things we're involved in, and I love every day of my life, and I hope they'll join in online with us. My book, it's called Scarred, is available. They can order it online at helpavet.com.
Dave, thank you so much for your service to this country, and thank you for your faithfulness to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. God bless you as you continue to serve Him.
Thank you, James. And to all who are listening and have served or are serving right now, thank you. If you'd like a copy of today's program, simply call 1-800-652-1144. Marvin McIlvaney comes to share how the snowflake generation is a sign of the end times on today's Bible in the News.
In Matthew 24, we read, "And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world?" People have been wondering about the end of the world for a long time. Here we find a reference to it 2,000 years ago. Although, as Jesus points out, he didn't know the exact day or hour, he did know what condition the world would be in when it happens. In verse 10 we read, "And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another." Have you ever seen such a bunch of offended people in your life? It seems everyone in America is offended about something. And the hatred. Jesus says very plainly that people will be offended and hate one another. Many people are saying they have never seen America this divided. One of the new words that made it into the 2016 Collins English Dictionary is the term snowflake. Snowflake is often used as a derogatory term to refer to millennials, a generation said to be easily offended, attention-seeking, and lacking resilience, often lumped together with the words liberal, political correctness, safe space, and identity politics. Snowflakes are accused of living in a bubble of self-righteousness and shutting down free speech when it comes into conflict with their own opinions. Millennials are accused of being weaker than previous generations. The word snowflake refers in part to the uniqueness of each snowflake, the idea being that each and every one of us is special. Snowflakes are also delicate and fragile, a metaphor suited to the overly sensitive and sheltered nature this group is accused of embodying. So delicate, in fact, they had to set up safe zones and safe spaces on college campuses to shield these young people from being exposed to other thoughts and ideologies. Another sign Jesus gave was in verse 12 when he said, "And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." What is this iniquity that will abound, and why does it make people's love grow cold? There are three primary Hebrew words which are often used equally or in like manner. These words are often translated as sin, iniquity, or transgression. Chata, which is most often translated as sin, means to miss the mark. Awan, often translated as iniquity, relates more to the inner character and points to an intentional twisting of a given standard. Pisha, often translated as transgression, is more of a willful rebellion against the given standard. In verse 12, Jesus uses the word awan for iniquity. The Hebrew word awan used here carries the idea of something being twisted and something especially perverse. So, because things will be twisted and perverted, the love of many will grow cold. Talk about twisting something and making it perverse. How about the Canadian father who was jailed after he disobeyed a court order and refused to call his 14-year-old biological daughter, who identifies as male, his son? How can you believe in free speech when the government can make you use certain pronouns when talking to others? How about the Democrats warning that a Supreme Court case involving a Mississippi abortion law could add ammunition to pack the court if the justices undermine Roe v. Wade? In other words, if they decide abortion is wrong, then they, the Democrats, will add more members to the Supreme Court, liberal members, until the law is the way they want it. And how about teaching children that America is racist and actually a bad place to live? They call that critical race theory. The core idea is that racism is a social construct and that it is not merely the product of individual bias or prejudice, but also something embedded in the legal system and American policies. And how about not being able to get on an airplane without proving who you are, and yet millions of illegals are streaming across our borders? How about that just having a border is un-American and racist? Is this what Jesus meant when he said things will be so twisted that people will hate each other? Jesus also said in John 13:35, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Let's not grow cold, people. But if you get more excited about seeing the publisher's clearinghouse van in front of your house instead of Jesus coming in the clouds, you may have an iniquity problem.
In our resource center today, we are offering some excellent items from our friend, historian Bill Federer: Miracles in American History books and DVDs. Miracles in American History is a series that shows examples in our nation's history where God has intervened to save and bless our nation. The books, Volume 1 and 2, can be yours for a gift of $40 or more. The DVDs, Volume 1 through 4, and the two books can be yours for a gift of $65 or more. Order Miracles in American History today by calling 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Or you can order online, swrc.com. Next time, our host Larry Spargimino will visit with Rabbi Kurt Schneider and talk about how to sustain your faith through troubled times. Watchmen on the Wall is a production of Southwest Radio Ministries and is supported by faithful listeners like you. Visit swrc.com.